Hello and welcome to the Chester and Fincher Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 6th of February. This is Juliet Shestack. When I looked at dates coming up in February, I was surprised to see that Random Acts of Kindness Week is an annual event in February. You may have heard of it already, but I was intrigued to read more about it. Their website says that when we choose kindness, our brains light up with oxytocin, dopamine, and connections, showing that kindness is good for us as well as those around us. They even have a full calendar of ideas for being kind to yourself as well as others, which is a good thing, I think, to consider in the new year. This week, for example, includes giving a genuine compliment to three people, listening to a song that makes you smile, learning to say hello in three different languages, listening to someone without interrupting, or simply giving your pet extra cuddles. Seems like a good plan for the busy, mad world we live in. Sunrise on Friday this week is at 7:47 a.m. with sunset at 5:04 p.m. And now on with the news. Chester Northgate Arena refurbishment, completion nears. Brio and Cheshire West and Chester Council are celebrating a major milestone as the refurbishment of Chester's Northgate Arena hits 1 year, with the transformation firmly on track for completion in the spring. As a part of the Chester One City plan, the refurbishment is reimagining the much-loved leisure centre as a modern, inclusive, accessible and welcoming space for the whole community. Led by Reed Construction, significant progress has been made across the site. Key areas are now taking shape, with the sauna, steam room and squash courts substantially complete. Swimming pool areas have been completely overhauled, including the creation of new viewing areas and the installation of acoustic panelling to improve customer experience. Modern and welcoming changing rooms on both ground and first floors are close to completion. External works continue, with final stages currently being agreed. A new flume has been installed, and the specialist contractor iPlay is preparing to install brand new water play equipment. Brio has also shared the good news that the whale is staying in the main pool and will be getting a fresh lick of paint. The leisure centre has remained open throughout the refurbishment, offering a temporary gym, fitness classes, and a wide programme of sports and activities, retaining thousands of loyal customers and enabling them to remain physically active. Matthew Parker, Managing Director of Brio, said, "Reaching this milestone is a fantastic moment. The transformation is simply incredible. And as we now enter the final stages, excitement grows. We can't wait to welcome existing and new customers to what will be a truly outstanding facility for Chester, the wider borough population, and beyond." Councillor Adam Langan, Cheshire West and Chester Council's Cabinet Member for Children and Young People, said, "This exciting project demonstrates the Council's commitment to investing in high-quality, inclusive leisure facilities that support health, well-being and community life. I really can't wait to see the fully refurbished Northgate Arena when it is revealed in the spring."
Hello, this is Taj. Fire hit Chester City Centre bar, closed for foreseeable future. A Chester City Centre bar and restaurant will remain closed for the foreseeable future following a fire at the venue this week. Music Hall Tap confirmed the news after assessing the significant damage caused by the blaze. The fire broke out in the kitchen area shortly after 1 p.m. on Monday the 26th of January, with 5 fire engines, 2 from Chester and 3 from Ellesmere Port, Parry Lane and Frodsham, attending the scene along with the city's aerial ladder platform. The venue on Music Hall Passage, close to the cathedral, has posted on Facebook, "A fire broke out on the top level of Music Hall Tap, causing significant damage to the upper level, back of house areas and parts of the building structure. Over the past 48 hours, we have been assessing the extent of the damage. Unfortunately, Music Hall Tap will remain closed for the foreseeable future until we can fully guarantee the safety of all customers and staff. It added, "We will be back soon." Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service said they attended a fire in a kitchen. The aerial ladder platform was used to check temperatures from above and to assist with damping down. A service spokesperson said, "Neighbouring shops have been checked for signs of fire spread and any smoke present has been naturally ventilated. Relief crews remained on scene overnight to monitor the building with a thermal imaging camera to check for any hot spots."
Lucy Letby's parents criticise documentary footage. Lucy Letby's parents have said it would likely kill us to watch a new Netflix documentary on their daughter's crimes, calling footage featuring their home a complete invasion of privacy. Speaking to the Sunday Times, Susan and John Letby also questioned why police had released video of Letby's arrest, which took place inside the couple's house, where they have lived for 40 years. The trailer for the programme includes video of officers entering the house and Letby being arrested on suspicion of murder and attempted murder while she is sitting in bed. She is then led out of the property wearing her dressing gown. In a statement to the paper, the couple said, "The previous programmes made about Lucy, including Panorama and the almost nightly news showing her being brought out handcuffed in a blue tracksuit, are heartbreaking for us. However, this Netflix documentary is on another level. We had no idea that they were using footage in our house. We will not watch it. It would likely kill us if we did. We have, however, stumbled on pictures of her being arrested in her bedroom in our house and her saying goodbye to one of her beloved cats, which are even more distressing. Heaven knows how much more they have to show. All this taking place in the home where we have lived for 40 years. It is in a small cul-de-sac in a small town where everyone knows everyone. It is a complete invasion of privacy, of which we would have known nothing if Lucy's barrister had not told us." The pair questioned the decision by police to release the footage, claiming Detective Superintendent Paul Hughes, an investigating officer, seemed to have a deep hatred of them. They said, "Why is Paul Hughes, with whom we always fully cooperated, allowed to show the world what took place in our house that morning, and Netflix not even have the decency to tell us? He seems to have a deep hatred of us, even though it was us who first went into Blakenham Police Station in March 2017 to report that the hospital consultants, Stephen Breary and Ravi Jarim, were making Lucy a scapegoat." According to the trailer, the documentary will feature footage that has never been released publicly, as well as interviews with police and lawyers. Last month, it was confirmed the former child nurse will face no further charges over additional deaths and collapses of babies that were investigated by police. In a rare step, Cheshire Constabulary spoke out publicly against the decision, which it said was not the outcome that we had anticipated throughout our investigation. A group of campaigners is backing Letby and has submitted reports to legal review body, the Criminal Cases Review Commission, to try to get her convictions overturned. Letby has been twice denied permission to appeal against her convictions in 2024. Lady Justice Thirlwall's inquiry report into how Letby was able to commit her crimes on a hospital neonatal unit is due to be published this year.
Arriva Wales bus fares set to rise. Passengers across North Wales and Chester are set to see an increase in bus fares. Arriva Bus Wales will raise some fares from Sunday, February the 8th. Adult single fares will generally rise by between 10p and 20p. However, under 21 single and day tickets will remain unchanged at £1 and £3 respectively. Arriva Multi-Journey and 1BWS tickets will also be revised. The announcement prompted a backlash on social media, with many passengers voicing their frustration on the Arriva Bus Wales Facebook page. One person said, absolutely ridiculous, putting prices up when most services are so shoddy and hardly ever turn up. Where I live in Bangor, the G9 hardly ever runs on time. Another commented, "So does this mean the bus services will be better? Cleaner buses? Buses turning up on time?" A third added, "How does that work? Fuel is the lowest it's been in for 4 years." Changes to bus timetables have also been implemented across North Wales. These came into force on January the 25th and affect services including the Chester 10A and the following at Wrexham: 2, 2A, 2C, 2S, 3, 4A, 4C, 5, 5C, 7, 8, 11, 11A, 33, X33, and the 44.
Council gender pay gap reversed as women overtake men. Women have overtaken men in the average pay stakes at Cheshire West and Chester Council for the first time. A report to the authority's staffing committee revealed the mean average gender pay gap had swung 0.1% in favour of women, what it called a significant change, from 2024's 1.5% in favour of men. It means for every pound a male council employee earns on average, a female takes home a penny more. The report said that this was the first time the pendulum had swung in favour of women since reporting began in 2017, and was as close as mathematically possible to a zero gender pay gap. The issue of gender pay is complex and not the same as equal pay, where legislation exists to ensure a man and woman doing the same job get the same pay and conditions. Gender pay instead focuses on the fact men and women can often gravitate towards different roles, which often have different salaries. The report added, "Many factors influencing the gender pay gap are cultural, and so any changes will take a longer time to take effect. For example, more men taking time out to care for children on an equal basis to women, or more men in roles traditionally seen as female roles, and vice versa." Gender pay has been a long-standing issue nationally, and according to the Local Government Association, the body which acts as the voice of local authorities across all councils in England, women were paid 3% less on average than men in 2024-25. The report pointed to a number of measures Cheshire West had taken to address pay gap issues. These included family-friendly benefits, including childcare vouchers and holiday purchase, and schemes to support staffs to manage the cost of living. Agile and flexible working offered at all levels to support work-life balance and caring commitments. Offering part-time work in a wide variety of roles. And paying a local living wage for all employees, supporting those in the lowest graded jobs. The report added that many factors influencing the gender pay gap were cultural. It said, "The point of gender pay gap reporting is not to check that women are paid equally to men for the same job or work of equal value. It's about whether there are differences in the sorts of jobs done by men and women, which result in men generally being paid more than women." The report said figures may change again next year, with factors such as staff being absorbed from other organisations, particularly in IT, where most staff tended to be male.
Latest on £8 million Ellesmere Port market revamp as Phase 1 completed. Ellesmere Port market customers will soon be able to see the completed first phase of the refurbishment works. To enable traders to move to new locations within the refurbished area at the start of Phase 2 works, the market will be closed from Monday, February the 9th to Wednesday, February the 11th. The cafes will remain closed until Monday, February the 16th. When the market opens on Thursday, February the 12th, the entrance from the Port Arcades shopping centre will also be reopened, as well as retaining access from the car park. Councillor Nathan Pardo, Cabinet Minister for Inclusive Economy, Regeneration and Digital Transformation said, "Thank you to the customers, market traders and staff who have supported Ellesmere Port Market throughout the first phase of refurbishment works. It's an exciting time for Ellesmere Port Market, with the second phase of works beginning in early February, including new public spaces, seating, cycle parking and landscaping. As with the first phase of works, Ellesmere Port Market will remain open to customers, with customers able to visit and support their favourite traders. The £8 million refurbishment works have been carefully planned to allow traders to continue to trade whilst part of the market is closed off, to allow the works to be carried out safely and to minimise disruption. The market improvements include a new building facade, photovoltaic solar panels on the roof, new toilets, refurbished stalls, seating, improved layout and public Wi-Fi, plus a new flexible events space will be created in the flea market area. Externally, there will be a new alfresco area and landscaping along with cycle parking and seating."
Plans for new 90-home development in village near Chester. A 90-home residential development has been suggested for a village to the south of Chester on the Welsh border. Countryside Properties Limited and landowner Jay Whittingham have submitted plans to develop a brownfield site north of Barton Road, Farndon, demolishing a livery centre with stables and paddocks. The result would be a 90-home development with 27 affordable tenure homes, that's 30%, and 63 open market. The properties would range from one-bedroom to four-bedroom properties. Additional car parking spaces and landscaping will also be created. The site would be located on the eastern flank of Farndon, with access currently available via a gated entrance onto Barton Road at the southwest corner of the site. The developers, in a planning statement prepared by J10 Planning, say that a landscaping and visual impact assessment state that the project would cause no substantial adverse impacts and is judged to be acceptable on landscape and visual grounds. The application adds that it will be well served by facilities in Farndon and nearby Chester and Wrexham and benefit from excellent sustainability credentials. A public comment, also visible on the council's planning site, objects to the development on the ground that an increase in residents would place greater pressure on the village's lack of services, utilities, and may set a precedent for future development. The resident lists larger class sizes at Farndon Primary School, difficulty accessing GP appointments, and more cars navigating the village's roads as some of the knock-on effects of a large new development. The resident adds, "Should the development go ahead, the village will have in the region of 5,149 residents and, estimating two cars per proposed household, this is often more because of teens with cars, this will mean a possible 180 cars trying to negotiate the village's roadways."
Chester boss McIntyre to leave role at end of season. Chester have announced that manager Callum McIntyre will depart the club following the expiry of his contract at the end of the season. McIntyre was appointed as Blues boss back in May 2022, becoming the seventh permanent managerial appointment since Chester's reformation. Prior to this role, he took his first step into permanent senior management with Runcorn Linnets, leading the club to a playoff final in his first full season at the helm. During his time at the Diva Stadium, he has led Chester into two National League North playoff campaigns. Last season, the Blues made it all the way to the final, where they were defeated 2-1 after extra time against Scunthorpe United. Ahead of the home match with Radcliffe on Saturday, Chester sat 12th in the standings, 6 points off the playoff places. CFU chair Nick Phillipson said, "The board would firstly like to place on record its thanks to Callum and all members of the managerial team for their efforts during their time at Chester FC. All of us, directors, players and staff, recognise that results of late have not been good enough, and we are fully aware that the situation must improve if we are to achieve our target this season. We understand some people may question the timing, but the board has given this full and proper consideration, and we feel that this is the right decision for the club, for now and the future. Callum's record speaks for itself in terms of playoff finishes. He retains the full support of the players, and everyone is clear on what is required over the next 3 months. We hope that this clarity about the future allows us all to have one focus until the end of the season, giving absolutely everything to try and make the playoffs and get our club promoted back to the National League.
A social gardening community project has been relaunched in Flintshire. Digging Deeside was re-established by Rainbow Biz CIC at a new site in Queensferry, after its original location was devastated by storm damage. Digging Deeside ran weekly at the Connors Quay allotments, providing environmental activities in a safe outdoor space for about 30 individuals who accessed the group to make friends and learn new skills. The project was set up 10 years ago by Rainbow Biz CIC. Since then, the group has evolved and many individuals have benefited. Storm Babette and the resulting carnage put an instant end to the gardening project, as the raised bed with all the growing vegetables was covered in floodwater and sulphurous silt from the overflowed brook, a hazardous situation. Digging Deeside's new brightly coloured shed was left standing in about 3.5 feet of water, damaging everything in the shed and the shed itself. Connors Quay Labour Community Club was the first to step up and offer a space for the group to continue meeting. This has been their home for almost 2 years. In July 2024, Rainbow Biz CIC announced they will be starting a new Digging Deeside site build at Queensferry War Memorial Institute. Director Ian said the new Queensferry War Memorial Institute site sees a large expansion in space compared to the previous site. We now manage 5 raised beds, 4 no-dig beds, 2 polytunnels and a large greenhouse. We now have access to the facilities we so desperately needed. The social gardening project is aimed at improving well-being and relieving stress. The weekly community project offers basic gardening skills, life skills, and the chance to meet new friends. Most importantly, the project offers a safe place to meet like-minded people. Now at our new home, we're delighted to expand the reach of our project further into the community, working with local organisations and businesses to distribute the organic vegetables we will be producing to where they're needed most in the local community. At this new site, Rainbow Biz CIC are also working alongside friends and colleagues from Veterans and Community Hub CIC to make the Queensferry War Memorial Institute a well-being centred space for the region.
Connors Quay Labour Club has found itself firmly in the spotlight after learning that it played a role in the early musical journey of Gary Barlow. The club's connection to the Take That star has sparked fresh interest locally, after references to his early performances surfaced online and in a recent Netflix documentary, prompting renewed pride among members and customers. Treasurer Sue Jones, 53, said the discovery had been a claim to fame for the club and had surprised many who were previously unaware of the link. Some customers didn't know about it at all, and neither did I, she said. It's exciting to hear, and people have been asking about it every day now. Gary Barlow is believed to have played at the Labour Club when he was about 11 years old. His granddad was a member of the club, which meant the future pop star spent time there as a child. Rather than performing on the main stage, Sue said he would play in the bar area using the club's organ in between other acts, where he could build his confidence and experience in front of a live audience. Sue, who has been involved with organising entertainment at the club for around a decade, said the revelation only came to light after she was tagged in a social media post featuring old footage and references to the documentary. "We can't say we made him," she said. "There were other pubs and clubs as well. Connors Quay is just part of his history, part of what made him, who he is, but we are proud to be involved." The renewed attention has led to discussions about marking the connection more permanently, with Sue saying that the club could possibly put up a sign to commemorate the pop star. She added that the Labour Club continues to play a similar role today by supporting young performers, including through regular open mic nights aimed at giving musicians their first taste of performing live. "That's where it all starts," she said, "just giving someone those first steps."
A Flintshire woman died after waiting more than 15 hours for an ambulance, an inquest heard. Now a coroner has once again warned that the ongoing problem of ambulance delays could lead to further deaths. John Gittins, senior coroner for North Wales East and Central, has issued a further prevention of future deaths report to the Welsh Ambulance Services University Trust. The inquest in Ruthin heard that the first 999 call for Heather Parkhill of Garden City, Deeside, was made at 8:41 p.m. on April the 7th, 2025, but there was no ambulance available at the time. Further calls were made at 6:45 a.m. on the 8th, 7:04 a.m., 7:39 a.m., 8:33 a.m. and 9:37 a.m., but there was still no ambulance available. At 10:41 a.m. the call was graded as the highest priority and a first responder arrived within 7 minutes. Resuscitation efforts continued for an hour before Mrs. Parker was confirmed as having died. A post-mortem examination revealed that the cause of death arose from a condition caused by the chronic excessive consumption of alcohol, and the coroner recorded a conclusion of an alcohol-related death, but contributed to by neglect. In his report, he stated, "Evidence was given to the inquest in earlier response, even 20 to 30 minutes earlier, would probably have prevented this death." Regarding the risk of future deaths, he said, "For many years, myself and other coroners have raised concerns regarding so-called ambulance delays. However, problems regarding the unavailability of resources persist. I have a mandatory statutory responsibility to raise concerns where they exist, and it is clear that lives continue to be lost as a result of this problem." Liam Williams, a Executive Director of Quality and Nursing at the Welsh Ambulance Service, said, "On behalf of everyone at the Welsh Ambulance Service, I want to express my sincere condolences to Mrs. Parkhill's family. While we can't change the outcome, we are an organisation committed to learning and are grateful to the coroner for his examination of this case and accept his findings and the prevention of future deaths report, which we take very seriously and will respond to in due course."
Wrexham and Flintshire both missed their recycling targets last year, leaving both facing potential infraction charges from Welsh Government. The North East Wales authorities are among 10 Welsh councils that missed the Welsh Government's waste recycling target after it was increased from 63% to 70% in 2024-25. Flintshire fell 6.9% short of the national benchmark, while Wrexham was 4.9% down. Last year, Flintshire generated approximately 74,000 tonnes of waste. Of that, around 47,000 tonnes was recycled. At a current rate of £200 per tonne, Flintshire could receive a charge of £960,000. Flintshire already has infraction charges for 2023-24 and 2022-23, totalling £1.2 million, which have currently been suspended while the Welsh Government reviews whether the authorities' switch to 3 weekly black bin collections has brought it into line. Flintshire County Council's Chief Officer for Street Scene and Transportation, Katie Wilby, said that current data showed that three weekly collections had been effective so far. These changes are already having a significant impact on our recycling performance, and we have achieved a rate of 70%, in line with the statutory target, for the first two quarters of 2025-26, suggesting we are on track to meet the target this year. Should Flintshire meet its target, as predicted, it would have a strong case to ask Welsh Government to dismiss all infraction charges. Last year, it successfully negotiated the dismissal of a £663,000 infraction charge from 2021-22 after introducing three weekly collections. Wales is currently ranked second in the world for recycling, leading the way in the UK and just behind Austria in the global rankings published by Eunomia Research and Consulting and ReLoop in 2024. Deputy First Minister with responsibility for climate change, Hugh Iranca-Davies, said, "Recycling is now a part of who we are as a nation. The achievability of the new 70% target is demonstrated by the fact that more than half, 55%, of councils have met or gone above it in the first year, with 90% having improved their recycling performance. In situations where an authority does not meet the statutory target, there is a well-established process in place that operates on a case-to-case basis to assess whether a fine should be applied."
An investigation will be held into allegations that parents were shadow banned from applying for reception places at St Anthony's Catholic Primary School in Saltney, amid uncertainty over its future. Councillor David Coggins-Cogan secured support for a notice of motion calling for the inquiry into claims that parents were unable to choose to enrol their children at St Anthony's for September 2026, via Flintshire's online portal. St Anthony's, which has been earmarked by Flintshire County Council and the Diocese of Wrexham for possible closure, alongside three other Catholic schools, St David's Primary in Mould, St Mary's Primary in Flint and St Richard Gwynne High School. St Anthony's School in Saltney was a thriving primary school, said Councillor Coggins-Cogan. The numbers were rising, the roll was rising, right up until the point the consultation started. At that point, numbers began to fall. On April the 29th last year, at 11:15 a.m, a member of staff at the contact centre told a parent who rang up to enrol their child that there was no point doing it. The school was going to close and the consultation was just a fig leaf, he added. That was followed up by another parent who wanted to enrol their child, so went onto the online portal and found that St Anthony's was no longer on the list. When they emailed in, they were told, "No, we don't deal with St Anthony's. It deals with its own admissions." Saltney councillor Richard Lloyd supported councillor Coggins-Cogan's motion. He said, "Following a meeting that myself and councillor Jason Shalcross had with parents of St Anthony's over a year ago, it was brought to our attention that some parents were unable to register their children in either nursery or reception class at St Anthony's Primary School via the council's website. This may explain why the numbers at the school are now so low. Whether it was done to run the numbers of the school down, I don't know. I have no proof of that, but I do support this notice of motion." Councillor Eastwood refuted the claims, stating that St Anthony's had always been available for parents to choose for this coming September. She said, "St Anthony's remains visible and selectable on the admissions portal. When I checked personally myself yesterday, and applications have been received in this round." She then called on Councillor Coggins-Cogan to apologise for making unfounded allegations. Instead, he doubled down, claiming that he could provide evidence for his claims to the cabinet member. The complaints I referred to here predate yesterday, so whilst the portal may have been correct yesterday, it was not correct when the parents tried to enrol their children, he said. I have the evidence, the emails from this council, informing parents that they should hand their admissions in themselves to St Anthony's. Councillors voted 34 to 17 in favour of the motion to investigate the matter.
Families are being urged to come forward to check headstones after 170 were declared unsafe at a Flintshire graveyard. St Matthew's Church put out a request for people to check if their family member's grave has been marked with a sign declaring it unsafe. Gravestones have been marked with a sign following a survey carried out by volunteers from the church during the autumn of 2025. Once you've located the grave in question, you will need to fix the damage, as the church has stressed that the upkeep of individual graves is, of course, the responsibility of the families of the deceased. For families unable to fix the headstone, St Matthew's Church said it will have to lay the grave down flat after a period of time to avoid any safety issues. St Matthew's Churchyard is now closed for burials, but a new area for cremation remains has opened. The church has said the graveyard is maintained to a high standard and pointed out certain areas are left to grow in the summer months, which has left St Matthew's bid to become an eco-church. The survey that saw the dangerous graves marked was only carried out in recent months. St Matthew's is attempting to get in contact with as many loved ones of those buried beneath an unsafe grave as possible. Efforts include the church website, Facebook page and magazine. After the search for family links is finished, St Matthew's will lay stones which have not been repaired flat. The church is making these efforts to prevent any stones from toppling over. The survey carried out by St Matthew's volunteers during the autumn of 2025 was confirmed by a stonemason. Anyone who wants more information or advice has been asked to contact the church via its website.
A man who was clocked speeding while he took his unwell dog to the vet has been allowed to keep his licence. Sean Moore of Bruncoyd Park in Mould appeared at Wrexham Magistrates Court on Friday. The 65-year-old admitted that on February the 11th last year he exceeded a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit on the A494 between Garden City and Deeside Industrial Park interchange. Prosecutor Brian Robinson told the court that on the day in question, the defendant's vehicle was clocked by average speed cameras at the location. He was travelling at an average speed of 58 miles an hour, when the limit at the location is 50. Representing himself at the hearing, Moore was asked if he wished to say anything about the offence. "Yes," he said, "I'm guilty. At the time this happened, I had my dog and was trying to get him to the vets. He was having a seizure at the side of me and had been struggling with fits. It was my fault. I have no excuses." The court heard Moore had 9 points on his licence at the time of the offence, and with the 3 he was to receive for the new speeding offence, he was at risk of an automatic ban. He therefore made an application of exceptional hardship to the court. In the hope of persuading the magistrates to allow him to keep his licence, despite reaching 12 points. Moore explained he works as a self-employed business development manager, which sees him travel extensively. He explained he is reliant on the income he generates from that job and also acts as the primary carer for his mother. Based on the defendant's reasons, the magistrates granted the application and allowed him to keep driving, but imposed 3 penalty points, bringing him up to 12 in all. "I cannot thank you enough," the defendant said. Moore must pay a £192 fine, £77 victim surcharge and £130 costs. He was told he'd been thrown a lifeline and was encouraged by the bench to use it.
Flintshire County Council has acknowledged ongoing problems with its planning enforcement service, with fewer than half of cases investigated on time during the latest reporting period. A performance report covering the third quarter of the 2025-26 financial year is due to be presented to the Council's Planning Committee on Wednesday. It shows that only 47% of enforcement cases were investigated within 12 weeks, placing the service in the Welsh Government's lowest performance category. The report states that enforcement performance has remained static and that the team is effectively working at capacity. Officers cite a combination of high-profile cases, staff absence, and the complexity of investigations as factors contributing to delays. During the quarter, 34 enforcement cases were investigated. The council says pressures are likely to continue into the next quarter, raising questions about the service's ability to improve performance without additional resources. While enforcement performance remains weak, the council reported much stronger results in other areas of planning. Just over 90% of all planning applications were determined within 8 weeks or an agreed extension time, meeting the Welsh Government's benchmark for good practice. For major developments, 85.7% of applications were decided within the target time frame. The report also shows that 97% of planning decisions were made under delegated powers, which is slightly above the Wales-wide average. For the year to date, this places the Council within the Welsh Government's fair performance range. Councillors are being asked to note the contents of the report when it is discussed at the next planning committee.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the news from Flintshire. Two men have been arrested following a series of burglaries and vehicle thefts across North Wales and Cheshire in the early hours of Tuesday, the 3rd of February. Police in North Wales first received reports of two burglaries in the Ryl and St Asaph areas, where vehicles were stolen from outside residential addresses. At around 6 a.m. the same day, officers from Cheshire Police were alerted to a burglary at an address in Chester, during which an Audi Q3 was taken. A further report was made at 6:55 a.m. to Cheshire Police of a burglary at a property in Crewe, where a Volvo XC90 and an Audi A3 were stolen. An investigation was launched, and following inquiries, officers from Cheshire Police Roads and Crime Unit located the stolen vehicles in the Sandbach area. After a pursuit, the Audi Q3 was stopped on the southbound slip road of the M6 at junction 15, where the driver, a 20-year-old man, was arrested. The Volvo continued along the M6 before being stopped by officers on the A38 in Birmingham city centre. A second 20-year-old man was arrested at the scene. Police said both men are from the North Wales area and remain in custody on suspicion of burglary, dangerous driving and failing to stop for police. Detective Constable Jack Ryder from Cheshire Police's Chester Proactive Policing Unit said burglary is a deeply personal crime that can leave victims feeling unsafe and insecure in their own homes. In these cases, our officers were swiftly deployed to the scene and quickly traced the vehicles involved, resulting in the prompt arrest of two suspects. I hope these arrests will reassure residents and businesses of our commitment to tackling this type of crime, and I'd like to thank all the officers involved for their quick response.
A tissue manufacturing plant in Flintshire is being brought back to life after being placed under new ownership. Northwood has announced that it has acquired the former Kimberley Clark site in Flint, which closed its doors last July. Kimberley Clark and Northwood have completed the agreement on the sale and purchase of the Flint factory, which is equipped with state-of-the-art converting equipment to produce environmentally friendly and compliant wet wipe products. The site will operate as Northwood Tissue Flint Limited. The transaction, which is now completed, means that all systems needed are being aligned for a phased start-up. Northwood said it will commence a recruitment drive to create a significant number of job opportunities in the local area. The plant closed last summer, which resulted in a loss of over 200 jobs. Paul Fascher, founder and chairman of Northwood, said, "This is another important acquisition and brings renewed opportunity for our businesses to expand in many traditional and new sectors. We look forward to populating the site and bringing it into full production under our UK management and ownership." Northwood operates across the hygienic sector in the UK and in Europe, and has grown to become one of today's leading UK manufacturers in the paper hygiene market.
A day in the life of disabled artist Alison Lapper. Alison Lapper, 60, was born in Burton-upon-Trent with no arms and shortened legs due to a rare condition called phocomelia. She was placed in care as an infant until the age of 17 at a school for children with complex disabilities in Sussex, and went on to study fine art at the University of Brighton, graduating with first-class honours. She was the subject of the Mark Quinn sculpture Alison Lapper Pregnant, which occupied Trafalgar Square's fourth plinth from 2005 to 2007. In 2000, Alison Lapper had a son called Paris, who appeared in the BBC docu-series Child of Our Time. He died from an accidental overdose aged 19. She lives in Worthing, Sussex. She says, "Lugging a disability around with you all day isn't easy. Plus, there's a lot of pain. My little body gets tired, so if I've got the chance of an extra hour's bed in the morning, I'll gladly take it. I didn't fancy breakfast today because I wasn't hungry, so I just got ready and did my makeup with my feet. I do need a bit of help getting sorted, so I have two full-time live-in PAs, 1 week on and 1 week off. Choosing someone isn't easy, but one of them was with me for a few years, and she's probably one of the reasons I'm still alive. When my son Paris died in 2019, I had a massive breakdown, and I carefully worked out how I was going to kill myself. I was going to get into my converted VW van, drive off a cliff, and be with my son. That particular PA was the one who sat with me as I was grieving, making sure that I didn't get into that van. I never painted Paris when he was with us, as he was too beautiful. When he was gone, the pictures started to manifest themselves to me. I was painting and crying at the same time. I heard things from him, messages that came via other people, and I still do. Becoming a mother was a surprise and the happiest moment of my life. There were people who said that I shouldn't be allowed to have children. Paris was bullied at school because his mum was different. He was one of millions of children who were swept up by the mental health crisis in this country. That's why I set up the charity The Drug of Art after he died. I wanted to offer those kids a chance for creative expression, something to stop them falling into the social media algorithms. Via social media, the bullying is constant. Painting is my safe space, so I'm right there in that moment and nothing else happens. I started painting with my feet when I was very young. Then I switched to mouth painting when I was 14. I've spent the rest of my life trying to catch up. I think disabled people still come at the bottom of the list. Some of the alterations to my home were paid for by the state, but anything specialised, such as the riser on my wheelchair, has to come out of my pocket, and that was well over £1,000. And every year I have to go through the rigmarole of proving that I still need 24-hour care, as if they'll knock on the door and see me making my own lunch. Like, have my legs got longer and my arms grown back? That would be a miracle. I was brought up in care under a very strict regime, so I've never been what you'd call a rebel. Having said that, I can be a pain
because I don't find it easy to trust people. My father left before I was born, and I know that my mother didn't want me. When you've been through that and survived, it would be nice to think you could sit back and not have to worry about the day-to-day stuff. Ha! I went to use a disabled access toilet the other day, and it wasn't big enough for my wheelchair to get in. That happens all the time. I enjoy going out for dinner, but you can't beat being at home, watching the telly with a plate of pasta. I used to have a glass of wine, but my body can't handle alcohol now, so I stick to vanilla tea. Technically, my PA goes to bed at 10, but I'm often up till 1, and I might need help getting into bed. I can walk about at home myself, but sometimes I fall over. I like being tired, knowing that I've achieved something. Yes, it's annoying that people cross the road to avoid me if they see me coming, but so what? I'm still here. I'll still be here tomorrow, and I'll keep moving forward. This was adapted from an article in the Sunday Times of Sunday, January the 25th, 2026.
Coyote swims to Alcatraz. A coyote has become the first on record to swim all the way to Alcatraz off San Francisco in the United States. The coyote was caught on camera swimming in the rough seas to the island, which is famous for once housing a maximum security prison, now a popular tourist attraction. It's thought that the coyote swam from San Francisco in California, which is about 1.25 miles away from Alcatraz, or possibly from another neighbouring island. Unsurprisingly, the animal looked a little worse for wear when it arrived. Rangers from the US National Park Service, which now looks after the island, were alerted to the unusual visitor, but said it had disappeared. Experts assured the public that coyotes are very good at looking after themselves and will have lots of food sources on the island.
Broadcaster Clive Myrie talks about his life. Clive Myrie has covered people being pulled from the rubble of earthquakes, the horrors of ethnic cleansing, and war zones across the world. He wrote farewell letters to his wife and family when embedded with 40 Commando Royal Marines going into Iraq in 2003. But the 61-year-old newsman doesn't seem to have become hardened by it. He's raw and empathetic, weeping on air in reports. We can see him crying again in the new BBC series Clive Myrie's African Adventure, as he is given his African name by the Fante tribe elders in Ghana. I am pathetic, I'm a bit of a gusher, he says with a wry grin. He'll weep at well-played performances of Bach and through almost every minute of the film Hamnet, but the warmth of the Fante elders, who created a flag for him, coming so soon after visiting the British fort where his ancestors could well have been forced onto a slave ship and transported to the Caribbean, hit him hard. I've had no problem having multiple identities, he says. I'm proud of the fact that I'm a Lancastrian and born in Bolton. I am very proud to be British. My roots are in Jamaica, and I am 100% proud of that too. So the idea that my ancestors came from that part of the world is easy for me to deal with, but actually being there set off all kinds of emotions in me. He can't be certain exactly which part of the Gold Coast his family came from. 12.5 million African people were enslaved, and DNA tests are not a precise science. But he likes his African name given by the Fante elders, Papa Kodwo Abaka. Papa because he's a man, Kodwo based on his date of birth, and Abaka meaning worth, one who has knowledge and gives it to others. Myrie grew up in Bolton, one of seven children, to a mother who sewed for the designer Mary Quant, and a father who worked in a car factory. Haywood Grammar School instilled a love of music in him. He learned the violin and the trumpet. He joined the Bolton Youth Orchestra and toured Germany and Holland. And his parents backed him through university, even though money was tight. Then he applied to join the BBC trainee reporter scheme. As host of BBC News at 10 and Mastermind, he is now one of the corporation's best paid stars.
If he hadn't gone to the BBC and moved to London, he might not have met his future wife, Catherine, then a publishing executive, now a furniture restorer, at a book launch in the early 90s. The way I tell the story, Catherine saw me and just fell in love with me. It was obvious as soon as she saw me, he says with a laugh. But actually, it wasn't like that at all. It took me quite a bit of time to win her over. It started that night with him, an old colleague, and Catherine racing through the streets of London in his red Spitfire sports car, top down, wind in their hair. They married 6 years later in 1998, and he credits her with giving him the inspiration, courage and space to pursue his dreams of travelling the world as a foreign correspondent. He has spoken before of their decision not to have children, partly for the sake of their careers, and he doesn't regret that. I have a multitude of nephews and nieces and children of friends around me, he says, and I don't like how this world is turning out for them. Few job opportunities, a lack of international cooperation, social media which makes the world feel meaner and nastier. I see all this and there's a big, big part of me that thinks, thank God I didn't have kids. When he's back from a war zone or after covering a brutal story, Myrie cuts himself off from the news completely for a while and goes to the opera, visits art galleries, listens to live music, reads literature and poetry. He says, the stuff that's nurturing, the stuff that human beings do and create, not the horrors that I've just seen. I've never been in a position where I couldn't function because of those awful memories coming back. I have not been diagnosed with PTSD like lots of my colleagues have. Catherine, he says, has been crucial in this. He remembers writing that farewell letter to her before the invasion of Iraq. It was a way of distilling our life together, he says, and what she had meant to me at that moment and in the preceding years. And it was a chance to tell my wife how I love her and how she was so important to me. And just for a second, he looks like he might be on the edge of tears again. This was adapted from an article in the Times magazine of Saturday the 31st of January 2026.
Gardeners urged to plant tredges. What do you get when you cross a tree with a hedge? A tredge. Okay, that's not the funniest joke you'll hear in 2026. But tredges are an actual thing. They're smaller than a tree, but bigger than a hedge. And the Royal Horticultural Society wants to see more of them in England's 25 million gardens to help boost the nation's tree cover and wildlife. Explaining the benefits, Dr. Mark Gush from the Royal Horticultural Society said that besides supporting biodiversity, hawthorn hedges have the power to absorb pollution from busy roads and reduce flood risks from summer thunderstorms. Woodland covers 10% of all the land in England, but the government wants to increase this to 16.5% by 2050. The Woodland Trust will showcase a garden with tredges at this year's Chelsea Flower Show in May, after which the garden will be relocated to Hawthorn Primary School in Newcastle in an area that's low in tree cover. Gardeners urged to plant tredges. What do you get when you cross a tree with a hedge? A tredge. Okay, that's not the funniest joke you'll hear in 2026. But tredges are an actual thing. They're smaller than a tree, but bigger than a hedge. And the Royal Horticultural Society wants to see more of them in England's 25 million gardens to help boost the nation's tree cover and wildlife. Explaining the benefits, Dr. Mark Gush from the Royal Horticultural Society said that besides supporting biodiversity, hawthorn hedges have the power to absorb pollution from busy roads and reduce flood risks from summer thunderstorms. Woodland covers 10% of all the land in England, but the government wants to increase this to 16.5% by 2050. The Woodland Trust will showcase a garden with tredges at this year's Chelsea Flower Show in May, after which the garden will be relocated to Hawthorne Primary School in Newcastle in an area that's low in tree cover.
TV gardener Monty Don talks about his life. TV presenter Monty Don, 70, grew up in Hampshire. He was a gardening columnist before, in 2003, taking over from Alan Titchmarsh as the host of Gardener's World, which he still presents. He was awarded an OBE in 2018, and he has written several best-selling books. His latest show is the BBC's Monty Don's Rhineland Gardens. He lives with his wife Sarah in Herefordshire, and they have three children. He says, "The king prunes and plants and weeds. As a hands-on gardener, he walks the walk. He is a very serious gardener, and the queen is a very keen gardener too." Why hasn't there been a female presenter of Gardener's World? "I don't see it as right-on PC corrective behaviour. I just think it's a matter of time. It would be refreshing. There has been a blokish, middle-aged male head gardener prototype. I'm aware that I come into that category too, when actually there are more women than men who garden. It's better to be a bit of a pin-up than not. I feel an embarrassed bashfulness about being called one. I don't look longingly in the mirror and think, 'You gorgeous thing.' I feel like I'm 180 years old, wrinkly and slightly losing my hair. I clean my teeth and I shave, and that's the last time I look at myself in the mirror. The jewellery business that I ran with my wife collapsed after the 1987 financial crash. We lost everything. We lost all our money, our house, our business, our furniture. For about 2 years, we literally had no money. I was claiming on the dole. We were severely in debt. We didn't go bankrupt. With hindsight, maybe we were stupid about that. Maybe we should have just said, 'We can't do this.' But it took me 7 years to pay it all back, and it was very difficult. One of the features of depression is that you're full of self-loathing. You're aware that you're appalling. You feel sorry for yourself for being so awful. That's a vicious circle, and it just makes you more depressed. You sense it coming. As I've got older, I've learned techniques to ward it off. When you get outside, you are connecting with the rhythm of the seasons. I find that helpful. There's a lot to be said, in an old-fashioned way, for just getting up and going to work. I bought my puppy Ned from James Middleton. My son sent me a picture of the spitting image of one of my dogs, and it turned out to be James Middleton's. James had read my book about my dog Nigel, and he emailed me saying, 'I was very moved by your story about Nigel. My dog is having pups. If you want to replace Nigel, I've got a nice dog that just looks like him.' This was too much of a coincidence to resist. Last year, I did a dog garden for Chelsea Flower Show, and James came with his dogs, Ned's sister and mother, and they had their first reunion. Young people nowadays can't get mortgages. It's impossible for young people to do what we did without really big help. My own children couldn't possibly afford what we did. We bought a house in a slightly remote part of London for £35,000. That house now sold for £2 million. I have been asked to do Strictly Come Dancing 4 times. Last time when I said no, it took a lot of persuading that I really meant it. I am, without question, the world's worst dancer. I don't like or understand dancing. And I had a new knee in November, so my shapes are limited on the dance floor. I don't want to be a celebrity. I try to avoid any programme that has the word celebrity in it. When you reach 70, you have to accept that there are things that you can't do anymore. I can't chop down trees or saw them up entirely on my own anymore. When you take on a pet, one of you will have to deal with death. One of you is going to die, probably the pet, and it's heartbreaking. I've had lots of dogs. They're all buried in the garden. I adored Nelly, my dog. It broke my heart when she died. In Switzerland, people like their gardens to be neat and tidy. In the Netherlands, they're very good at community gardens. A stroke makes you terribly aware of your own mortality. I had a minor stroke in 2008. I wasn't well, so I couldn't do much. I couldn't drive. In a way, it was a good time because it made me stop. It was the first moment I realised that, yes, you are going to die. All the clichés are true. The things that matter, you realise, are love, family, friends, maybe a nice glass of wine or a cup of tea. Not fame, not fortune. Nobody on their deathbed is going to say, I wish I had been more famous. This was adapted from an article in the Times magazine of Saturday, January the 31st, 2026.
The hidden world of hedgehogs. A major new study has uncovered the hidden world of hedgehogs living in our gardens. Researchers at Chester Zoo and Nottingham Trent University studied 415 gardens across Cheshire and found that hedgehogs were present in more than half, proving how important these habitats are. The team used footage from motion sensor cameras to capture the cute critters' movements. They analysed thousands of images and the specific features of each garden to identify how often hedgehogs visited and what made them visit most. The findings showed that food was the most important factor, with the spiky mammals appearing in 78% of gardens that supplied hedgehog food and 53% of gardens where bird food was left on the ground. Hedgehogs were almost 70% more likely to be seen in gardens where foxes had also been spotted, possibly because they knew that there would be more food. The study was published in the International Journal Urban Ecosystems.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Peter, and here he is.
Hello everyone, welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 6, where we focus on stretching. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, it will be ideal if you can use a hard chair so that you can sit upright, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. We'll start with your feet flat on the floor. Okay. If you are standing up, just step your feet hip width apart. Relax your shoulders and stand up nice and tall. Take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor. Keep your back straight, relax your shoulders and take a couple of deep breaths. In, out. So, we are going to start with a calf stretch, so if you're standing, have your feet facing forward and step your right foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor, and then bend into that right leg, keeping your leg straight. Put your hands on your right thigh and hold this position, feeling that stretch in the back of your leg. If you're sitting, straighten out your right leg and place your heel on the floor so your toes are pointing upwards, keeping your left leg bent with your foot flat on the floor, and put your hands on your right thigh and lean forward. You should feel that nice stretch in your straight leg. The important thing about stretching is that when you feel the muscles start to stretch, just hold it there. Don't take it any further. So hold that stretch for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we are going to swap legs. So if you're standing with your feet facing forward, step forward your left foot and bend into that left leg, keeping your back straight. The weight should be on the left foot. And if you're sitting, straighten out your left leg and put your heel on the floor with your toes pointing up, and then keep your right leg bent. Put your hands on your bent thigh and lean your chest slightly forward into the stretch. You should feel that nice stretch in your straight leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next, we're going to do a hamstring stretch. Feet facing forward, step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep this leg straight, then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean the chest forward gently. Remember to keep your back straight. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of your leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then return to an upright position and swap your legs. So this time, step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you, with your foot flat on the floor, then bend your right leg and just lean forward gently. Again, feeling that nice long stretch, hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next up, we have a few head and neck stretches. Starting with the head tilt forward, tilt your head gently forward as if you're nodding. Nice and slowly, and then return upright and just do that a couple more times. So nodding nice and slowly downwards and return upright. Keep going slowly, so that should feel a nice stretch in your neck. And the final neck stretch, head rotation. Turn your head to the right slowly, as if you're looking over your right shoulder, then return to middle, then turn your head to the left slowly, as if you're looking over your left shoulder. And just keep going, looking from left to right, slowly feeling that nice stretch in your neck. So for this next one, bend your right arm and bend it over your head, so your hand is touching your back, like you're going to scratch your back. And your elbow is next to your ear. With your other hand, press gently on your elbow and feel that nice stretch in your arm. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then release. Then do the same on the other side, so bending your arm over your head with your hand on your back and placing your other hand on your elbow and pressing gently, feeling that nice stretch down your arm. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we have the side stretch. Stand or sit up tall. Raise your right arm high with your palm facing up, then lean slightly over to your left side, nice and slowly, feeling that stretch all along your right side. Try to keep your body straight and hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now return back to the center. Lean your left hand over and feel that stretch all the way down your left side and hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the next one is a chest stretch. So open out both your arms to the side so that your chest sticks out a little and you can feel a nice stretch all the way across your chest. Just a little bit like a long-lost friend is coming towards you and you are going to give them one big hug. So with your arms open wide, feeling that stretch across your chest, keep holding here for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next up is a trunk rotation. What we mean by your trunk is your upper body. Stand or sit up tall, straight back. Place your hands on your hips and slowly look to your left, feeling your upper body rotate. So bringing the right shoulder in front and return gently to center, and then slowly look to the right, bringing the left shoulder in front, feeling your upper body rotate. Now keep going a few more times, nice and slowly. Great work, everyone. If you're standing, remember to keep your knees soft. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you are hugging a tree, directly in front of you. Your arms form a nice circle in front, and then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other, and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant. So that's the end of the stretching session. I hope you feel loose and revitalized. Just to finish off, shake it out. So just shake those arms and hands, then legs and feet. Great work, everybody. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have a great health benefit. It's fun and you simply feel better. So keep going.
TNF Soundings.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Tanya with some information about eye exercises. Traditional optometry has always been focused on correcting vision via spectacles, contact lenses, or devices such as magnifiers. However, in the modern world where our visual requirements are different and often more stressful, many optometrists and indeed individuals are needing to consider managing situations and symptoms in a more holistic way to take account of eye strain resulting from screen time. The online world is full of articles, videos, and tips about eye exercises and their value, but do they really do any good? Here we look at some of the commonly suggested exercises for your eyes and consider whether they can make a difference for anyone with a visual impairment. Perhaps the first thing to remember about eye exercises is that they can't improve your eyesight or correct a major problem. There are, however, some circumstances where exercises can give you some respite from tired eyes, or they may help strengthen your eye muscles and make it a little easier to focus when needed. Exercises could potentially help relieve symptoms such as eye strain, headaches when reading, difficulty in concentrating on screens, or if you suffer from occasional bouts of blurred or double vision. If you have a particular concern about your eyes or a decline in your vision, it's essential to talk to an eye care professional rather than simply relying on a program of exercises. It's unlikely that exercises will damage your eyes, but if you have any concerns or notice that previously minor problems are becoming more frequent or more severe, do not hesitate to contact your local optician or eye clinic. So, what are some simple eye exercises that you can do at home? First, let's look at blinking. Regular blinking is a natural reaction for many people, but there is a theory that your blink rate drops when you're staring at a computer or phone screen. A reduced blink rate can lead to dry, tired, or irritated eyes or headaches. If you feel any of these symptoms starting, take notice. Sit back and make a conscious effort to blink more often, for a full second each time. Regular blinking should keep your eyes lubricated and help tired eyes. Now let's think about changing focus. There are two exercises around changing focus to help relieve eye strain. The first is sometimes called a 20-20-20 exercise and is designed to help your eye muscles when they become tired from focusing on the same thing for too long. To help overcome this, you should take a 20-second break every 20 minutes and use those full 20 seconds to focus on something that is 20 feet away. In modern measurements, it should really be 20 seconds every 20 minutes to focus on something 6 metres away, but the old-style 20-foot measurement used here makes for a more memorable exercise name. Regardless of whether you work in feet or metres, the idea is that changing your focus will give your eyes an opportunity to relax, reducing the chance of eye strain. The other exercise centres on switching your eyes between focus on objects that are close by and those that are further away. An easy option is to hold your two thumbs in the air, one near your face and the other one at arm's length. Focus first on the near thumb for 2 seconds, switch to the far thumb for 2 seconds, then switch your focus to something across the room, and then finally to something even further away, for example, something on the other side of the road. Repeat this process 5 times. Next on the list is rolling your eyes, and this isn't just about showing what you think of what someone else has just said. There are a couple of variations of eye rolling exercises designed to increase the flexibility of your eye muscles. For the first one, sit in a comfortable spot and slowly roll your eyes in a clockwise direction around 10 times while keeping everything in focus. Now repeat the exercise, but rolling your eyes 10 times anti-clockwise. For the second exercise, imagine a large number 8, about 10 feet or 3 meters in front of you. Slowly follow the lines of the imaginary number 8 with your eyes several times in one direction, then do the same in the other direction. And the last exercise to consider is using your palms to help relax your eyes. If you feel your eyes could do with a rest, gently cup your palms over closed eyes. Make sure you don't push the heels of your hands into your eyes. It's important not to put any pressure on the eyeballs. Cover your eyes to block out all light for around 30 seconds until any residual images fade to black. The purpose of this exercise is to soothe strained or tired eyes. And it's a good one to finish on because it's important to rest your eyes after exercising them to make sure you don't overwork your eye muscles. After exercising, full relaxation can be achieved by closing your eyes for 2 minutes or looking into the far distance for 2 minutes. It's important to remember that whilst these exercises can help relieve eye strain and fatigue, they do not replace regular eye health checks. For those already under the watch of an ophthalmology team, checks will be set at regular intervals dependent on individual needs. Otherwise, regular eye examinations are recommended every 2 years.
DNF Soundings.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, February 7th. And there's drama on Radio 4 in the afternoon. Transcendental Wild Oats by Louisa May Alcott. 3 o'clock, Radio 4. Opera on 3 on Saturday has Handel's Ariadante. 6 p.m, Radio 3. Loose Ends with Chat and Music with Clive Anderson is on Radio 4, alternatively at 6.15. That's Loose Ends with Clive Anderson. While This Cultural Life, pianist Imogen Cooper, is the topic at 7.15 on Radio 4. Conversation Extra with Laurence Olivier. 9 o'clock, Radio 4 Extra. followed at 9:30 by Great Lives' Vivian Lee. On to Sunday, and just a minute, the panel game, if you missed it in the week, Radio 4, 12:30. Trump and Greenland, how MAGA, which is Make America Great Again, went Arctic. Radio 4 for this, 1:30, Sunday afternoon, February 8th. Opening lines, Gone with the Wind. It's a discussion about Margaret Mitchell's epic novel, just before you can hear the American Civil War novel on Radio 4. So opening lines, Gone with the Wind, Episode 1, 2:45, Sunday afternoon, John York explores the epic novel. And then at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, Drama on 4, Gone with the Wind, a stunning tale of love and loss, dramatised by Rachel Joyce. While on Radio 2, Sounds of the 70s with Bob Harris, 3 o'clock over on Radio 2. There's a music quiz, Counterpoint, on Radio 4 at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. While a showcase of love poems is The Verve, 10 past 5, Radio 4, Sunday afternoon. Sibelius' Symphony No. 5 you can hear on Radio 3 at 8 o'clock. While Word of Mouth with Michael Rosen is alternatively on Radio 4 at the same time, 8 o'clock Sunday night. On to programmes then that are serialised right throughout the week, same time, same radio station, Monday to Friday. So each day, same radio station, same time, Monday to Friday. Book of the Week is The Colour of Home. It's a memoir by the former Home Secretary, Savage Javid. 11:45 in the morning, Radio 4. Classical Live, the daily concert, this week showcasing French music, is at 1 o'clock on Radio 3 all week. Well, Composer of the Week is Henrik Schultz on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. Zeb Soans has his usual relaxed evenings with Classic FM at 7 p.m. all week. While Book of Bedtime, James by Percy Everett, a reimagining of the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, 10:45 each night, all week, Radio 4. On to the individual highlights then for the rest of the week, going back to Monday, February 9th. And the final part of Understand, An American Journey, Episode 4, at 11 o'clock on Radio 4. The idea of freedom is foundational to America. But whose freedom and what kind? Understand, An American Journey, Radio 4, 11 a.m. And Monday night, The Blues Show with Kerris Matthews is on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Tuesday, February 10th, and the drama This Thing of Darkness. It's episode 2 of 5. It's on Radio 4 at 2:25. Lady Killers with Lucy Worsley is on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock. Alternatively, Historical Drama is on Radio 4 Extra, Noon Ghosts, also at 3. What's Up, Docs? The Doctors discuss the science of kissing on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. And you heard it here first. Chris McCausland hosts the panel game about sounds, 6:30 p.m, Radio 4. As it's a Tuesday, the latest In Touch news for the blind and partially sighted at 8:40 on Radio 4. Or Jamie Cullum has his jazz show on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Wednesday, February 11th, and the drama Rays of Darkness, an autobiographical drama by Gwyneth Lewis. 2:15 for this, Radio 4. There's Alternative Murder and Drama on Radio 4 Extra at 3 o'clock, A Fair Exchange. In the Radio 4 comedy slot, The Making of Colin Holt is at 6:30 on Radio 4. Well, Adam Fleming returns with Antisocial, where he investigates an issue of the day. Radio 4, 8 p.m. Wednesday. While The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe is on Radio 2 at 9. Thursday, February 12th, In Our Time with Misha Glennie, 9 o'clock in the morning, Radio 4. There's drama, Good People, The Great Reset, episode 1 of this drama, on Radio 4 on Thursday afternoon at 2:15. The Briefing Room, discussion of a story in the news, is on Radio 4 at 4. Well, Randy Felflace's Destruction Manual, A Puppet, discusses climate change. 6:30 p.m, Radio 4 in the comedy slot. And yes, I did say a puppet. Alexi Sayle's Strangers on a Train, the comedian chats to train passengers on Radio 4 Extra at 7 p.m. While The Country Show with Bob Harris is on Radio 2, Thursday night at 9. And finally, Friday, February 13th, the drama Limelight, Wolf Valley. It's an eco-thriller and it's part 4 of 5 on Radio 4 at 2:15 on Friday afternoon. Child in a Dark Wood is an alternative drama on Radio 4 Extra at 3. While Life Without the Moon, Alan Davis examines and imagines a world without the moon. 2:45, Radio 4, Friday afternoon. Round off your week with the news quiz on Radio 4 at 6:30. Hopefully some comedy in that. Add to Playlist has a list of musical connections. 5 in a row, all slightly connected to each other. 7:15, Radio 4. Well, Friday night is Music Night, a showcase of composers with alternative careers. 7:30, Radio 3. Finally, Americast, the week in USA politics. Rounded up for you with Justin Webb, Radio 4, 11 o'clock, Friday night. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Hello, this is Demi welcoming you to your audio described TV programme starting Saturday the 7th and ending on Friday the 13th of February, written by Christine. Some of the usual scheduling makes way for the Winter Olympics coverage this week, but there are still some old favourites and new programmes to enjoy. So, starting with Saturday, after the Early Risers American Sitcom Fest from 6:15 a.m. through to 10:45 a.m. on Channel 4, featuring episodes of King of Queens, Everybody Loves Raymond, Frasier and The Simpsons, you could travel to Leominster in Herefordshire for BBC One's Bargain Hunt at 11:30 a.m. Can a repurpose of space outweigh a desire for postures new? In Kirstin Phil's Love It or List It on Channel 4 at 2:55, which is followed by Phil Spencer's New Zealand's Best Homes at 3:55. Into the evening, and the contenders continue their fight for a place in the quarterfinals of Gladiators at 5:45 on BBC One, and it's the semi-final of The Masked Singer at 7 on ITV, followed by quiz show The 1% Club at 8:30. The Reverend Richard Coles explores the beautiful coasts beyond the poetic sounds of the shipping forecast on Channel 4 at 6:30 in Sailing the Shipping Forecast, followed by 60-foot waves, killer whales, hypothermia and tongue rot in the Great Icelandic Swim with Ross Edgeley at 7:30. Over on BBC One, Casualty at 8:30 is followed by the final episode of Waiting for the Out at 9:20, while Channel 4 has Alice Roberts uncovering the secrets of Rome's success in a new series, Roman Empire by Train, at 8:30. An elite force of female warriors protect their West African kingdom in Channel 4's historical action film, The Woman King, at 9:30. And on ITV, It'll Be All Right on the Night concludes your evening choices at 10:30. On to Sunday. Again, fans of American comedy sitcom series can get an early fix from 5:55 a.m. right through to 1:55 p.m. on Channel 4 with King of Queens, Everybody Loves Raymond, Frasier and The Simpsons. The Fletcher family need a local farmhand to help them manage their livestock in Fletcher's Family Farm at 11:30, while Bargain Hunt visits Wetherby Racecourse on BBC Two at 12:20, followed by More Digging for Britain at 1:15. You also have an afternoon film choice, animated adventure comedy sequel Shrek Forever After at 1:15 on ITV. Into the afternoon, Channel 4's George Clark's Amazing Spaces is at 3:20, Then at 4:25, Sandy Toxvig and her wife Debbie get the chainsaw out to save a patch of ancient woodland in Great British Woodland Restoration. At 5:25, you can meet Brixham's Maverick Skipper, who live streams his latest catch to his customers in the series Devon and Cornwall. Meanwhile, it's the Chase Celebrity Special on ITV at 4:30 and Gladiators on BBC One at 4:35. Your evening choices start at 6 on ITV with the 1% Club, followed by Rob Brydon's The Floor at 7, while over on Channel 4 you can meet French Bulldog Spud in the Doghouse at 6:50, followed by The Great Pottery Throwdown at 7:50. At 8 you can choose between BBC One's Call the Midwife and ITV's Limitless Win with Ant and Dec, and at 9 there is the start of BBC One's four-part adaptation of the 1954 novel Lord of the Flies. Channel 4's Secret Genius with Alan Carr and Susie Dent, and the first episode of a new espionage series on ITV, Betrayal. Gogglebox fans have a double bill on Channel 4 at 10 and 11, and the Oscar-winning romantic fantasy drama Ghost, starring Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore and a pottery wheel, is your film choice on ITV at 10:15. Now, for the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday, Channel 4 has episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond from 7:50am, Frasier from 9:10am, American Pickers at 11:10, Car SOS at 12:10, Find It, Fix It, Flog It at 1:10, and Chateau DIY at 5. Over on ITV, it's Dickinson's Real Deal at 2pm and you can escape to the country at 3:30 on BBC Two. Then it's the new regular soap slots. EastEnders, 7:30 on BBC One every weeknight except Friday. Emmerdale, 8 o'clock and Coronation Street, 8:30 on ITV and on to Monday. Four new pairs arrive desperate to stand out during their first team challenge in the series Chateau DIY, Win the Dream on Channel 4 at 5pm. And it's all hands on deck as the Fletchers gather in their expanded flock for an essential health check in Fletcher's Family Farm on ITV at 7:30. Sausage Bake, Aubergine Noodles and Treacle Tart are on the menu in Jamie's Feasts for a Fiver at 8 o'clock on Channel 4, which is followed at 9 by Guy Martin's House Without Bills, with tips on how to make your home cheaper to heat. Also at 9, there's episode 3 of Silent Witness on BBC One and episode 2 of ITV's espionage series Betrayal. There's a new series, Small Profits, on BBC Two at 10, followed by two episodes of What We Do in the Shadows at 11 and 11:25. Two episodes of Concord, The Race for Supersonic, are on Channel 4 from 10:30, charting the battle to build the world's first supersonic airliner. BBC One continues its industry series at 10:40, while over on ITV at 10:45, the Social Media Murders documentary exposes the online plot executed by the killers of 13-year-old Ollie Stevens. You have a film to complete your Monday evening options. A canoe trip becomes a fight for survival for four city friends in Deliverance at 11:50 on BBC Two. On Tuesday, the Culinary Challenge MasterChef, The Professionals, returns on BBC One at 8pm, while over on Channel 4, you can get some tips on securing ultra-low fares in Bargain Holiday Secrets. At 9 o'clock, True Crime Documentary, 24 Hours in Police Custody, is on Channel 4. Silent Witness continues on BBC One. And there is a new series on ITV, The Summit. 14 people bid to win a share of £200,000 by climbing one of New Zealand's highest peaks. Channel 4's 999, What Happened Next, is at 10, followed by Manhunt at 11:05, while BBC One has two episodes of its series Trying, from 10:40, followed by the return of the award-winning comedy Dinosaur at 11:40. The murder of Alice Ruggles is the subject of ITV's Social Media Murders episode at 10:55. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. MasterChef The Professionals continues on BBC One, and Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It on Channel 4, both at 8 p.m. At 9, there's BBC One's Can You Keep a Secret series. The Summit continues on ITV, and Channel 4 has Michael Jackson, The Trial. It's the final of Black Ops on BBC One at 9:30, and at 10, you can choose between comedy, One Foot in the Grave on BBC Two, and First Dates, Be My Valentine on Channel 4. You have Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 11:05, The Final Digging for Britain on BBC Two at 11:30, and Social Media Murders on ITV at 11:40, this episode examining the murder of Bianca Devins. And on to Thursday, a money-making app for parents, children's baking kits, an AI-powered cat flap, and portable composting toilets are the business pitches from budding entrepreneurs in Dragon's Den on BBC One at 8, followed by The Apprentice at 9. Over on Channel 4, George Clark's Building Home is at 8, followed by the final part of Michael Jackson, The Trial at 9. Grantchester is ITV's 9 o'clock choice, and at 10 you have The Apprentice, Unfinished Business, on BBC Two, and a documentary about migrant boat crossings into the UK, Not Welcome, The Battle to Stop the Boats, on Channel 4. Romantic Drama Ghost is on ITV at 10:45. It's the final of Mystery Road Origin on BBC Two at 11. You can spend another 24 hours in A&E on Channel 4 at 11:35 and follow climber Alex Honnold's bid to conquer the El Capitan Rock formation in California's Yosemite National Park without ropes on BBC Two at 11:55. And finally, Friday. It'll Be All Right on the Night starts your evening options on ITV at 7:30, and on Channel 4, the UK and NATO alliance is examined in Frontline, Our Soldiers Facing Putin at 8, followed by Gogglebox at 9. Also at 9, ITV's Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy series continues, and at 10:50 on ITV, Social Murder Mysteries examines the case of Abby Fisher. Your evening choices conclude with First Dates, Be My Valentine at 11:05 on Channel 4. That's it for this week. We hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week.
DNF Soundings.